This is the Transcend Human Podcast, a show dedicated to the spirituality and psychology of the human condition. This year, however, we're taking a detour together as I venture into the world of writing. Each episode documents my journey from the big idea to a complete fiction novel. Join me through the highs and the lows that are sure to be part of this creative process. All right, friends, here we go. We are back with another episode of the Transcend Human Podcast. More importantly, the Transcendent Trilogy series. So what are we looking at here? April 8th, 2024. Welcome back. Today's topic, The Big Idea. Chapter 1, Sharing, How Much is Too Much? Chapter 2, Elements of the Big Idea. And Chapter 3, That Told Me Something, But Not Much. Chapter 1, Sharing, How Much is Too Much? So we'll get into the whole sharing thing here in a minute. But first, let's go back to episode 1 of the Transcendent Trilogy series, where we talked about the big idea and where it came from. So it was a random night in the McMullen household. I was on my third or fourth rum and coke, headed toward another inebriated night of sleep, to be sure. Nothing special about the day or the evening, but when I passed out, something magical happened. I was handed a big idea, or better said, a big idea presented itself to me. The other day, I finished reading the book Big Magic by Elizabeth Gilbert. Absolutely brilliant. It was recommended to me by a writer friend years ago, and I actually purchased it. I think literally I had the conversation with her and I went out and I purchased the book, but it sat on my shelf collecting dust. Then, the other day, my wife and I were listening to an episode of the We Can Do Hard Things podcast on a drive back from San Diego, and guess who their guest was? Yeah, Elizabeth Gilbert. They talked about a lot of things, but at some point, the book Big Magic came up, and it sounded really good. So what did I do? I jumped on Amazon, and I ordered it right then and there. Yes, you heard me. Even though I had previously purchased the book, I ordered it again. Because at the end of the day, too much time had passed, and I literally forgot that I already owned it. That said, I began the book, the one that I just purchased, and I'll probably try to give the other one away to somebody at some point. So why is Big Magic so good? And why would I recommend reading it? Because like other inspiring books I've read about the creative life, books like On Writing by Stephen King, The Artist's Way by Julia Cameron, The War of Art by Stephen Pressfield, Real Artists Don't Starve by Jeff Goins, and Running Down a Dream by Tim Grawl, Big Magic is a primer for the creative person, a collection of truths about creativity, where it comes from, and how we access it. And according to Gilbert, we're all creative. But creativity isn't something that we have or something that we own or even train to become better at. Creativity is something we partner with. Like a force in the universe that is constantly shifting, moving, coming, going, and yet always there. So this is where I got the concept of a big idea presenting itself to me. According to Gilbert, creativity owns all of the big ideas. Like a sea of them, just out there swirling around. And every once in a while, creativity takes one of those ideas and it presents it to somebody, like a gift. Here, this is a very big idea, and I'm trusting you with it. From there, it's up to the person if they take the big idea and run with it, or if they squander the opportunity and eventually let it go. Because that's exactly what happens when you choose not to bring your big idea into the world. It gets recycled. And the same big idea could actually wind up in somebody else's hands. That's big magic. And as I look back with this new filter, this new frame of reference, I view that night a bit differently. I now see that on that fateful night, in my drunken stupor, creativity paid me a visit. It showed up and it said, "Daryl, I have something for you. I have this big idea and I'm trusting you with it. I'm hoping that you will take it, work on it, and eventually put it out into the world as a finished product. Wow, that's pretty deep, right? I mean, that's a whole other level. From a simple story idea to a big idea that the universe is actually handing to you. But that's how it's felt since day one. The big idea has this weird weight to it. It has influence. It rarely leaves my mind. I even feel its impact on my well-being, my mental health. There are times when I feel like I've developed a low-grade depression, and I find that it's because my work life has taken over and I haven't been able to spend enough time on the big idea. That separation, the estrangement from the project, comes with a heaviness that's really hard to describe. And then, based on Gilbert explaining how big ideas can be removed from people and handed to someone else, I can get really scared that that might happen to me. That if I just go on too long without working on it, or if I'm not making enough progress, maybe it'll all just go away someday. But lucky for me, it hasn't. It's been there all along, since that night many years ago, through the good days and the bad days, through writing sprints and months not touching it, it's still there, waiting for me to step up and start running again. So thank you, Creativity, for the honor, and thank you for trusting me with the responsibility of this big idea. Okay, that said, let's get back to the point of the chapter, sharing. How much is too much? So I've shared a lot about the big idea in general terms, right? Where it came from, how important it is, that it's a trilogy versus a single novel. All good things, but I've literally said nothing about the actual story. Why? Partly because I hadn't gotten there yet, but also because I'm a little nervous about it. With any artistic endeavor, there is built-in fear that there will always be someone better than you, somebody who could take your idea and bring it to life without breaking a sweat. The fear is that I'm not good enough, I'm not working fast enough, and that I'll never finish it. But at the same time, you want it so badly, right? You don't want to let the cat out of the bag. You don't want to put your big idea out there into the universe because somebody else might grab it and run with it. So you hide it away like a small bundle of $100 bills under the floorboards of your house so you can work on it slowly and not be worried that you'll end up losing it. But is that really the right thing to do? I don't know, to be honest. I'm pretty sure the opposite isn't the right thing to do either, to literally write your story online in a public Google Doc and share it with the entire world. But I'm assuming that there's a happy middle in there somewhere, right? A happy medium, so to speak. So that's what I'm going to try to navigate today. Chapter 2, Elements of the Big Idea. When I decided I was going to podcast about my writing progress, one of the examples I had was the Story Grid podcast with Tim Grawl and Sean Coyne. The podcast started back in 2015 when Tim pitched the idea to Sean. He said, "Hey, what if we do a podcast where I'm writing a novel and you are guiding me through the process based on the Story Grid methodology?" And that's how it all started. Tim would write a scene or two, then they would analyze it on the show. Of course, there were episodes on other topics and how the Story Grid methodology works. But for the most part, for the next year or more, Tim worked on his book and Sean tore it up. So you can imagine the toll this took on Tim. Now, not only was he being publicly humiliated at times, but his big idea was also being broadcast to the wider public without much of a filter. Now, I get the transparency piece in this scenario, because it was all part of his big idea for the podcast. So it makes sense that you would be over the top transparent about all things related to Tim's book. So for me, if I took it down just a couple notches, I can probably make it work. And here's what I mean about that. Be as transparent as possible while not providing spoilers, while not giving away the entire plot line. And if I can do that, it just might work. So here we go. I'm going to start with some housekeeping things based on the Story Grid methodology. First up, the genre five-leaf clover. So for those of you who understand StoryGrid, this is a really important step in the process. You must answer these five questions in order to set the foundation for your book. These five things will literally guide you through the writing process. And if you're wishy-washy at all about them throughout the writing process, you're headed for trouble. So let's look at each of the leaves on the five-leaf clover of genre. Leaf number one is the time genre. In summary, the time genre indicates how the reader experiences the time it takes to go from the beginning to the end of your story. It answers how long the story will take to consume, and there are three categories of time that most stories fall into: short, medium, and long. Now, obviously, I fall into the long form category, as each book of mine will be on the larger side and the entire story will be told across three books. Leaf number two, structure genre. The summary of the structure genre is that it indicates to our readers who or what the change of the story will affect. It addresses whether the change will occur for a single avatar or throughout the whole system or context. There are three categories of the structure genre that our stories can fall into: arc plot, mini plot, and anti-plot. My trilogy falls into the mini plot category. So mini plot stories focus on the change in a system over a single avatar, which is shown from many different avatar points of view. While many of the avatars follow their own arc plots, each of them make up a node of the overall system. So we see how the system is transformed over the course of the story. Examples of this would be Game of Thrones and Lord of the Rings. Leaf number three, style genre. The style genre sets the tone for what the audience will experience during the story. It puts constraints on what we include in the story to keep a consistent feel so the audience does not get confused. This genre leaf is divided into two broad categories and several mediums. The broad categories are drama and comedy. The mediums include documentary, musical, dance, literary, theatrical, cinematic, epistolary, and animation. So my trilogy is going to be dramatic and also cinematic. Drama, because stories in this category express a tone of solemnity. The avatars face reality as it is and experience pain the way we do. Emotions are truthful and fulfilling. And it's cinematic because these stories will have the qualities of film, like The Matrix, for example. Next up is leaf number four, the reality genre. The reality genre contains the way that all alternative worlds in our story operate by establishing codes, laws, and norms. It dictates how much readers must suspend disbelief when building the worlds of our stories in their minds. There are four categories of the reality genre that our stories can fall into: absurdism, factualism, realism, and fantasy. My trilogy basically falls into the genre of fantasy, which can be described in this way. The fantasy reality genre includes alternate worlds of wonder and imagination that require a comprehensive suspension of disbelief. Because of this suspension of belief, it requires a high degree of order so the reader can understand the rules of the alternate world and stay engaged. My subcategory is magical, described as alternate worlds with magical laws that can be mastered by certain avatars, but not everyone. They are nostalgic representations of the past where people earned the right to use magic. You can further break magical stories down into categories. For me, I'll just go over the two. So epic fantasy, of which Game of Thrones is an example, and portal fantasy, as in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. So my story basically falls into epic fantasy, similar to Game of Thrones. Leaf number five, the content genre. In summary, the content genre defines what is contained in a story and specifically determines the need and value at stake. It sets expectations for the reader using the four core framework, conventions, and obligatory moments. The content genre is divided into two sections, external and internal. My trilogy will be in the external category, and it will most likely be part of the action genre, which is described as a story focused on the protagonist's sacrifice for positive movement along the death-life value spectrum, while generating feelings of excitement in the reader. In action stories, readers see the lengths the protagonist will go to protect themselves and or their other potential victims. Now, within the action genre, my story falls into a subcategory called epic subgenre, described this way. In epic action stories, the luminary agent must confront group-derived interpersonal conflict, societal institutions, or tyrants. So there you go. My story could be explained high level like this. A dramatic, cinematic, long-form epic action adventure story set in a fantastical world facing a system-wide meltdown. So how is that for being concise? So why is this important? Why do we need to get this level of granularity before we even get started writing? Well, for a couple reasons. First, it will help you describe your story to agents, editors, and publishers in the future because it's the language they speak. Second, because knowing these things up front can help guide us through the elements of our story. Which brings up the next thing, the four core framework. So basically, understanding that in an epic adventure or an epic action adventure, there are four things that are at the core of your story. There is a core need, which is survival. There is a core value, which is death to life. There's a core emotion, which is excitement. And there is a core event, which is the hero at the mercy of the villain. In other words, if your story doesn't include these four things, you're going to have some serious issues. Or maybe you're writing the wrong story. You're writing a story in a different genre altogether. Next, we talked about nine conventions of an action story. So if I'm truly writing an epic action adventure story, there's going to be conventions. Genre conventions are specific requirements for the story's alternate world, avatars, or circumstances that create conflict and enable solutions. Conventions set up genre reader expectations. Without these, the reader will be confused, unsettled, or bored and quit reading. So here are the nine conventions required for an action story. First, an intense setting. Second, dueling hierarchies. Third, a hero. Fourth, a villain. Five, the victim. Six, a speech in praise of the villain. Seven, a deadline. Eight, set piece sequences. And nine, fast-paced and exciting plot. Now, there's more that goes with each of those, but I'm just going to kind of breeze over those just so that we can keep moving. All right. So the final thing to walk through are what we call obligatory moments. And in an action story, according to StoryGrid, there are eight obligatory moments that you must hit in telling your story. The first is an inciting attack by or threat by the villain. Second, the hero sidesteps responsibility to take action. Number three, forced to leave the ordinary world, the hero lashes out. Number four, the protagonist discovers and comes to understand the antagonist's MacGuffin or their object of desire. Number five, the hero's initial strategy against the villain fails. Number six, realizing they must change their approach to preserve life, the hero reaches the all is lost moment. Number seven, hero at the mercy of the villain. This is the core event of the action story, and it's when the hero's gift is expressed. And finally, number eight, the hero's sacrifice is rewarded. Now, it's important to understand that all of the things that we just discussed are for my story specifically, because I went through the genre five-leaf clover, and I determined where my story fit, where it fit in. Once I did that, my next step was to start researching these elements that we just talked about, the obligatory moments and the conventions. But for you, it could be totally different, right? If your story is a love story in the love content genre, you will have completely different core elements, and the conventions and obligatory moments will be different as well. For example, you don't typically have a hero at the mercy of the villain scene in a love story. So every writer needs to walk through this process for each new project that they start, laying the foundation for the rest of the writing phases. Chapter 3. That told me something, but not much. I get it. We just walked through the bones of my story, the foundation, the high-level explanation of the genre, and what elements will most likely be in the story. But that doesn't mean that you could tell somebody what my story was about, right? Because that was only the structure, the format, the box, if you will, that it lives in. The story itself is a whole other matter. So where do we start? How do I begin to explain my big idea? Well, maybe we do it this way. Maybe we walk through a few categories of my own, elements that inspired the story, and see how that goes first. We'll start with 4. Number 1 is spirituality, or more specifically, Christianity. So it shouldn't come as a surprise to anybody who's been around this podcast for a while that the trilogy includes elements of spirituality. I grew up Christian, spent every weekend in church, went to Christian schools, had mostly Christian friends. At some point, I did what most Christian kids do. I rebelled. I challenged the things that I grew up with, and I looked for the path that I felt comfortable with. Eventually, as many, many firstborns do, I returned to the faith of my parents, but because it was now my own faith, a faith that had been questioned and tested. This faith, this spirituality, has been evident in just about everything I've produced to date. My first book attempt was Controversy Theory, all the way up to Transcend Human and the Transcend Human podcast. Both of those things focused on the human condition in light of the battle that exists between God and Satan for the allegiance of every human being, past, present, and future. So it makes sense that my big idea for a novel had this included in it somewhere as well. Now, when a Christian says they're writing a novel, what's your first thought? For me, I assume that they're putting their faith on hold to write something secular. But why would I think that? Why would a Christian have to hide their faith in order to write a work of fiction? Is there something inherently secular about fiction? I don't think so. In fact, what are the parables that Jesus told, if not works of fiction with good morals and values? So yes, the trilogy does include a healthy dose of spirituality, which does worry me a bit, because growing up, the Christian books, music, and movies that I was pushed toward were never very good. You had to accept lesser quality in order to remain in that genre, as most miss the mark terribly. So I know I have my work cut out for me. What I'm hoping to accomplish is something similar to J.R.R. Tolkien, Lord of the Rings, or C.S. Lewis, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, both men who were highly interested in spiritual things and incorporated them into their books in ways the reader wouldn't immediately recognize. The problem is, I'm not Tolkien, and I'm not Lewis, so we'll see how this goes. Number 2, psychology. Why psychology? Well, probably because I grew up with it in some way, shape, or form, similar to the way I grew up with spirituality. Now, not from birth, but throughout my educational experience, it became more and more important. In high school, I was introduced to the ideas. In college, I studied sociology, criminal justice, and other parts of the behavioral sciences. And I wound up getting my master's in social work, spending the next 5 years or so working in the field of mental health. So because of my education, and all the supplemental material I read, my brain has been trained to think differently. You're going to laugh at me, but on my honeymoon, while my wife was flipping through People magazines, I was reading books on rational emotive behavior therapy by Albert Ellis. I was fascinated, right? The same way a person new to their faith can't seem to get enough of the Bible, I too was lost in the magical world of rational thought, cognitive clarity, the ABCs of REBT. As I've said before on the podcast, controversy theory was my first writing project, and it sought to ease the tension that I was feeling between my spirituality and the world of psychology that I was learning about. Apparently, that tension never left, because in 2020, I started Transcend Human, which was simply a new way to address the same idea. Less about the battle between good and evil, and more about the human condition it creates and how we can respond to it. And friends, no spoilers here. The trilogy deals with the same things, the battle between good and evil, or the spiritual side of life, and our response to the human condition, or the psychological side of the human condition. Together, combined, these two things make for a very compelling story. However, this isn't new to me or to my work. These themes are visible in numerous books and movies. Here's an easy one. Star Wars, right? You have the spiritual side, which is what? The Force. This idea that there's a light side and a dark side of the Force, good versus evil. And then there's the psychological side. How do the characters respond to their version of the human condition? Some chose the light, some chose the dark. But either way, it's a struggle that each person had to face. Next up, we have eschatology. No shocker here as well. Last year, we did an entire Transcend Human podcast series just on eschatology. Because for me, eschatology, or the study of end time events, was a major part of my growing up. I grew up in a Seventh-day Adventist home, and so it came with the territory. The word Advent is right in the name, meaning the arrival of a notable person, thing, or event, or to the Christian, either the advent of Jesus' birth or the advent of his second coming at the end of time. So this stuff was just baked into me during my formative years. And guess what? It comes baked into the trilogy as well. Along with the concept of spirituality and psychology, the story takes place as the world is coming to an end. Things are unraveling, and the earth is on its last leg, so to speak. Again, not rocket science for authors or movie makers, right? Apocalyptic concepts make for a great story. I put a list of movies in here that have to do with an impending apocalypse, and I won't read them all because I think I put close to 20 in here. But here are just a few. All the way back to 1931, there was a movie called End of the World. In 1961, Battle of the Worlds. 1971, The Andromeda Strain. 1983, The Day After. 1999, End of Days. In the 2000s, Left Behind. 1998, Armageddon and Deep Impact. Two great movies. And then 2021, Don't Look Up. Crazy, crazy movies like that. And those are just the ones I selected because I remember watching some of them. Now, if you go to the Wikipedia page in the show notes, you'll be able to see a huge list that stretches from 1916 all the way to today. But like I said, I'm not the one coming up with these ideas. They're obviously alive and well in the industry. And fourth, but not least, fantasy and or science fiction. So I'm going to end on this one because I'm also fascinated with stories that are told either in the fantasy or the science fiction genres. The first novel I ever read was part of a two-book fantasy series written by Stephen R. Donaldson. The series was called Mordant's Need, and book one was The Mirror of Her Dreams. Book two was A Man Rides Through. The world that he created was just magical, right? Fantasy. Fantasy became my thing. I had no idea that people could write that way. Then, shortly after that, Donaldson decided he was going to switch and do a sci-fi series. So he did a series called The Gap Cycle. I think there was at least four or five, maybe even six books in that series. And I read the entire series and I fell in love with science fiction as well. And over the years, I've continued to read stories that fall into these genres, along with books and movies that play well in both worlds. Reality with a splash of something magical. For example, I've talked about how Game of Thrones is a very realistic story set in a world that we recognize just way back in time. But then you realize that there's something going on, something a little different, right? There are dragons, there's a Night King, there are White Walkers, and there's just this underlying level of magic that shows itself in the way Bran can see the future and Melisandre can mask her age. This is more of what I'm shooting at with the trilogy. Not high fantasy with elves, gnomes, and fairies, and not hardcore science fiction with cyborgs and different races of people living on different planets all throughout the known universe. Instead, a story set on Earth, our Earth, just a little while into the future. And on top of that, throwing in a few elements that really aren't of this world. Call it fantasy, magic, mystical, or science fiction, I don't really care. But it's a layer that takes the story to a different level and keeps you guessing. So there you go. We're getting closer and closer to the big idea as we continue to peel back the layers of the onion. But again, let's get real. What is the story actually about? Well, based on the four things that we just walked through, here's a bit more definition. It's an epic adventure set in the future on this planet. The backdrop is the hastening demise of our world. There are forces of good and evil at work behind the scenes. People are being forced to choose what they believe or who they want to become. The natural world is crumbling. Society as we know it is falling apart, with governments grasping at straws to maintain control. But right before these events kick up, our protagonist, along with a few others, are selected to research an ancient artifact found in Egypt. Their research unveils something not of this world. And as the team learns more and more about the device, they come to question everything they were taught to be true. At the same time, a deep space exploration team is setting off on a long journey to map a new section of near space. On their journey, they encounter something they can't explain and can barely define by Earth's standards. The team returns to the area multiple times, performing a myriad of tests on the anomaly that they found, eventually finding evidence that could answer questions humankind has been asking since the dawn of time. These two teams don't realize it, but they are actually very connected in ways that they can't see and may never understand. As the world spirals out of control, their findings could be the only thing capable of saving humanity. So there you go. How's that for a high-level overview of the big idea? In the future, we'll dig deeper into some of these plot lines. I'll introduce you to some of the characters, and we'll wrestle with basic story concepts like narrative drive, dialogue, prologues, yes or no, realism versus the magical, elements of story grid, the hero's journey. So many things, so little time. But let's land the plane for this week. Wow, friends, this is starting to get real. I mean, as I continue to do research and write these episodes, it's getting more and more tangible with every passing day. It's like driving toward a distant mountain range. You've seen them for a really long time. You know what they are, but it's hard to see any detail. Then the closer you get, the more detail you start to see. At some point you realize, oh, there are hills in front of the mountains. You start to see roads winding over the hills and switchbacks winding up the sides of the mountain. You realize that there are random homes built in the wooded areas. And you can see the fast-moving rivers cutting their way through the sharp canyons, spilling into a crystal lake at the base of the mountains. That's the way I'm feeling right now, like I'm driving toward my story, and the closer I get, the more details are coming into view. It's an exciting place to be, and a little overwhelming, but it's coming, and I cannot wait to see what's next. Thanks for hanging with me again. I hope content like this is helpful as you continuing your creative journey, whether you're a writer, artist, musician, dancer, or even an electrician that finds art in setting up the wiring in a brand new home. We're all creating something. It's big magic, according to Elizabeth Gilbert, and it's available to all of us. That said, have a great week, everyone, and as always, keep transcending human.